today's first reading from the book of Sirach starts out with this expression, "Now I will praise those godly men, our ancestors." It's the beginning of a section of the book of Sirach, which is called the Praise of the Fathers. It's a section where the author of Sirach, or Sirach himself, speaks about the different famous figures of salvation history: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, then Moses and David, and different people. Well, I'd like to take this direction, starting with today's saints, Marcellinus and Peter. I said in the opening that they're famous and obscure. How can they be both famous and obscure? Well, they're famous because they have a feast day in the church, and their names are in the first Eucharistic prayer of the Mass, the what's known as the Roman Canon. So they have a very prominent place in the church. They're obscure because we don't really know that much about them, almost nothing. Marcellinus, they say, was a priest. Peter was an exorcist, and they were beheaded under the persecution of the Roman Emperor Diocletian, so around 304. Most brutal and one of the last of the waves of persecution in the early centuries of the church. Now, according to the tradition, the executioner, meaning the one who cut off their heads, told Pope Damasus about them. And Pope Damasus, this Pope Damasus I, he wrote an inscription or an epitaph on their tombs honoring their witness to the faith. So this is part of the reason why we still honor them. Now, Pope Damasus comes about 60 years later, so I was trying to figure out how the executioner could have spoken to the Pope. Then I realized maybe he wasn't Pope when the executioner told him. I mean, maybe this is just my speculation. We don't know. But maybe that executioner was converted by the witness of these two martyrs, because that does happen fairly regularly, starting with St. Paul himself, right? He was converted because he saw the execution of St. Stephen, or that's part of the reason. Anyway, the executioner probably at some point became a Christian. Maybe after Christianity was legalized, he felt free to come out and be a Christian. But in any case, he's the one who, it seems, told Pope Damasus about these men. There's also a tradition that the Emperor Constantine built a basilica over their tomb. Now, that's before Damasus, so that's pretty soon after their death, maybe 30, 40 years later. In other words, even though we don't know much about them, we do know they had an extraordinary impact on the church. Their witness, the story of their martyrdom, moved people deeply, and they were seen as heroes, as examples, as intercessors. Now, that tells us something about what is the lasting effect of our lives. Here, the book of Sirach says, for most people, nobody remembers them. When they ceased, they ceased. They are as though they had not lived, they and their children after them. And that's true of almost everybody. I mean, if you go back a couple hundred years, almost no one alive at that time is known now. And if you go back longer than that, not even historical records. So, I mean, most people fade into obscurity very fast. And that, to people who are longing for affirmation or worldly glory, that's a very discouraging realization, that you're going to be forgotten pretty soon after you die. It's not a big concern for a person of faith. Why? Because our real affirmation, our lasting glory, is in heaven, where we will never be forgotten, because God never forgets his own. He holds us in the palm of his hand. What we can build our life on is the love of God. A love so great that it's worth laying down our life for him and in witness to him. So that's why Marcellinus and Peter, even though we don't know them, in a certain sense we do know them. We know that we know their faith. We know that they're in glory. We know that their witness has had impact, and it's still impacting us right now, that men are so dedicated to the gospel and to the truth, the faith of Jesus Christ, that they will die for him. Okay, good enough, good enough. May we all have such a heritage. May we all have such an inheritance to pass on to the next generations. Let's take a look at today's gospel. Here we have Jesus. This is after his triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So we're in Holy Week here. He enters into Jerusalem. He goes right to the temple. He looks around and he sees the money changers and the vendors. And he decides, well, it's late in the day. I'm not going to handle this now. And he goes away back out to Bethany. Then the next day it says he's headed back toward the temple and he sees a fig tree full of leaves, which, as I understand it, means it's a fruitful tree. He's hungry. He gets to the tree. It's all leaves, no figs. Now, I've heard people misinterpret this as here's Jesus hungry and he doesn't have any food and he loses his temper and he curses the tree and it withers up. That's a very bad way of understanding the scriptures and a bad judgment of Jesus too. Jesus doesn't just lose his temper because he's hungry. The hunger of God, the thirst of God is for souls, is for love, is for a response to his great love. When Jesus says, "I thirst," from the cross, it's not that he wants a glass of water. Sure, he does, and he has his physical needs too. But much more deeply is that hunger of the soul, that thirst of the soul. And this hunger for figs is a symbol or a representation of his hunger for the salvation of his people, his hunger for the souls of the people he has come to save. And he's encountering among the Jews, especially the Pharisees, a lot of leaves and no fruit. A lot of religious show, but no real obedience to God, no real faith, no real conversion. And that's what he hates. God doesn't hate anybody, but he does hate hypocrisy. He doesn't hate hypocrites, but he hates hypocrisy. So this strange event of his cursing the fig tree is a lesson to us. It's a teaching to us about the evil of empty show, of hypocrisy, of religious show without any real, religious leaves without any religious fruit. Now, the reason why we can make this application of the fig tree is because Mark, the gospel, puts this story of the fig tree together with the cleansing of the temple. The temple is the fig tree, and the people there doing all their worldly business are displaying all their leaves. And when he says, "Get everything out of here, stop turning my house of prayer into a den of thieves," he's saying the same thing there as he said to the fig tree. Don't put on a show of religiosity that's untrue. Get rid of the leaves if you're not going to be fruitful. Better to be humble and poor and empty-handed than to have a lot of empty show. Let's go back to Marcellinus and Peter. We don't know much about them. But we do know that what they did, how they lived, was authentic. They were real Christians. They weren't just leaves. And they proved it by their faithfulness unto death. So they're examples to us of the opposite of the hypocrites, opposite of the fig tree with no fruit. These are fruitful trees. They're not famous for anything, except for their radical fidelity to the gospel unto death. Well, that's what's being set before us on this first Friday. On first Friday, we always honor the Sacred Heart. And as I said, in the month of June, we honor the Sacred Heart. Well, what the Sacred Heart is hungry for, what Jesus is hungry for, is not figs. He's hungry for us and our response of love to his love. So let's give him what he's hungry for. Let's give him ourselves.